Hello and welcome to Two Blokes Trading. Join us, the two blokes, Philip and Petter, as we dive deep into the complex world of financial markets and home trading. Today's episode is sponsored by BizIntra Financial Academy. BizIntra offers sponsored trading programs that have been developed by professional traders. Don't pay a fortune to learn how to trade. Simply sign up by using one of their partner brokers and receive trading education and signals by institutional traders. Make sure you log on to www.bizintra.com/two blokes for everything related to the markets. You won't be disappointed.
What's up, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Two Blokes Trading. I'm your co-host, P-Man, and I'm pretty sure we have Mr. Philip on the other line here.
Yeah, you have the other P-Man on the line.
What's up, Phil? How's your week been?
Oh, crazy week. It's been very, very busy for me, simply because exams are coming up now in college and CFA exams, so anyone out there who wants to be or who has already sat the Chartered Financial Analyst exams will know how difficult they are. Or it's, you know what, Google it. Because if you Google it, you will see many a write-up that says how much hours you have to put into this. So
you know what? How much study. I'm going to do the CFA just for shits and giggles, just to see how hard it is.
Good luck to you. Everyone says that, but then they realize, they see how much work it is. You know, like I had an MBA recently take a picture, a screenshot of a book for his exam. Now, he has a 25,000 word thesis he has to write, and he's been given 7 months to write it. And he sent me this picture of a book, 400 pages, and he said, I have to know every single bit of this in the next 6 months. So I said, right. You think he's got a lot of work to do? So I sent him the list that I have to know. And my pages are 3,800 pages. And I need to know 80% of that.
Wow.
So,
but is there any time limit on it? Or can you just study for it and just pick up any exam?
Well, you've level one. So you have to pass level one before you can go on. But they say you need around 300 hours of study to pass level one. But you know, whenever you ask anyone who's done level one, you ask them if they've passed, how much hours they put in. It's generally much, much more, like 500-600 hours. You know, like I probably put 600 hours into the level one so far. So,
well, you know what, Phil, I'm going to cross my fingers for you on the 1st of December. I hope you pass.
Yeah, do you know, I was actually worrying in bed there. I was thinking, oh my god, I have to sit in an exam hall for 6 hours. That's the one thing that really bothers me about the whole thing. I wish you could just sit the test and put your hand up and say, I'm finished, and then they let you go home. But they don't. And that's they make you sit around. So, because, like, I see their point. You can't disturb people. So it's the same with leaving certificate exams when you're finishing school. You can't just get up and go. You have to wait until everyone else. Or you're given, like, a 3-hour limit, and then you can go. But you can't just get up after an hour and leave, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. So that's my week. What about yours? What have you been at?
Well, I'm a bit hungover today, to be honest. I was doing my Christmas party, my yearly Christmas party yesterday. We had a Viking theme, or I had a Viking theme, and it was.
And nobody else did. it's just how I go out on a Saturday night, you know?
Yeah. It was a bit funny when I was getting into the cab, and the cabbie was like, "What in the worlds have I taken into my taxi right now?"
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm a bit hungover, so that's how it is. It was trade-wise, last week was pretty normal. I had two trades, a bit of conflicting, actually, because I had both a short and a long on the euro. That's not something I like to do, you know? So I had a bit of stress on one of those trades, but it worked out fine. So yeah.
Yeah, well, that's good. For me, very, very quiet, simply because it's study time and I don't want any distractions. So I don't want to think of any positions that I'm in. So nothing at the moment for me. Nothing interesting to me in the market. And I certainly, because I look at things from a macro point of view, I don't really want to own any equities. So The only thing that I really found interesting now, it's not something that I want to invest in, which was I looked at, I don't know if you know or have heard of Flybe, which is a UK a UK airline. They were in serious trouble for a long, long time, just not going good for them. And what happened was in one day their stock jumped 70%. So that was interesting. Now, the stock is just like really, really beaten down. It's like it's 16 pence a share at the moment or something, you know, but it was at like 340 pence a share at one point. So it's really, really been beat down. So when I saw that move 70% in one day, I was like, what the hell's going on here? So things like that interest me, but still, like, I can't invest in that because I know the overall market is at a knife edge, if you get me.
Yeah, so correlation again.
You know I could look at things from, okay, imagine I want to look at things from a portfolio management standpoint and say, okay, maybe I should start looking at getting long defensively and short cyclical. But that's if I'm running a fund or that's if I'm running like an equity long short portfolio. When you're not managing other people's money, you can just go naked short, you know? So,
a punt. Is that oh my God. I remember you saying that. You want to take a punt? You want to take a punt long on that stock? Well, you should, Phil. Sometimes in life you have to gamble.
Well, I just don't see myself going defensive long, you know, that way? Because I'm just like that. Like, I understand if you're managing other people's capital, you know, you need to manage risk. But when you're managing your own money, you can take a little bit more risk, if you know what I mean. So,
yeah, one of my pet peeves is actually when I'm like cross my monthly targets. Like, so let's say in October, I had a great October. Let's just say that I had it, and I let myself just take on a little bit extra risk. Like, let's say it's 2 or 3 days left of the month. I tend to do that sometimes, and I like it, just feeling the blood rush and the adrenaline, even though I shouldn't, you know, but I still do.
I know. I love that feeling too. It's a good feeling, especially when it goes right, when you take on that extra bit of risk, you know?
Yeah, of course.
But let's see. Moving on from our little introduction there, next week, news related, huge amount. Next week is an incredibly important week. So I expect volatility across all major currency pairs. I think if we're looking at the currency market, of course, I even see stock market volatility. I think if people don't know about looking at the VIX already, the volatility index in the United States, I think that's going to pick up. And if that does, that means it's risk off, which take risk off the table because option prices are getting more expensive. So, yeah, so I see next week being an interesting week. I'm going to actually give some predictions of what might happen. So first of all, I'm going to actually go through what's coming out next week and what you should be watching. And second of all, I'm going to tell you where you might see volatility pick up. So anyway, starting off, like even tonight is going to be there's like a big news announcement coming out. So like tonight is RBA. So Governor Philip Lowe is going to be discussing. So in Australia. So that's basically a government speech. That's not till a 10:15 tonight, GMT, of course. But a little bit of volatility on the market open, I'm sure. Monday, serious day. EU Brexit summit. You know, in 24 hours from now, basically, EU Brexit summit. And then the ECB, President Draghi, will be speaking at 2:00. Like, this is going to be serious volatility if things go negative or extremely positive. Either way, if it's going to be interesting to watch the euro currency. Also, even more interesting, 6:30 p.m. In the UK, Governor Carney speaks for the Bank of England. So surely that should be an interesting one to listen to. You're going to see volatility around the sterling. Next, we'll see nothing until Wednesday, and Wednesday is all about United States. So GDP quarterly, so Q3 GDP, they're expecting 3.5%. No change in the previous consensus, so I'm sure everything should be fine. But listen, if there is a change, you'll see volatility around the dollar core consumption as well, Q3. And Governor Powell from the Federal Reserve also speaks at 5 p.m. GMT. So Thursday then again, it's all about the United States for London Open. Well, not until 1:30 in the afternoon, we'll say. And then FOMC minutes at 7 o'clock. Again, volatility based around the dollar. Next, we'll say Friday. There is a little bit of news coming out of Japan, but I don't really see much change in the market. But Friday, November 30th, will be all about the Eurozone again. So keep an eye on the Euro for Friday also. So maybe you'll see some volatility based around the Euro on Friday. And that's pretty much it. But my opinion on what actually happens next week, things that I think are going to be interesting. If we are risk on, risk off, keep an eye on yen, keep an eye on precious metals. Those two things. And also, we have, like I said, the Brexit summit. So keep an eye on euro and keep an eye on sterling. Those four things, I think. So if you keep an eye on precious metals, keep an eye on yen, keep an eye on euro, and keep an eye on sterling. If you just, even if you don't even have to trade these things, I'm not saying find a trade. There may be no setup, but I'm just saying, listen to the, like I keep saying to people, listen to the news. You know, do you remember the time when you and I used to have a, like, oh God, what was her name? What, Janet Yellen. Do you remember we used to sit in the front, we used to share screens, Petter and I, and we were like, Janet Yellen's about to speak, and we'd watch it together. Do you remember?
Yeah, we would watch the market, how they responded.
Yeah, these are lessons, you know, like you learn from things like that. You learn that when she says, you know, remember the time she said, you know, we're starting to look into these 0% interest rates. She said that once. And as soon as she said that, that, like, the dollar had a massive reaction to that because she'd never said something like that before. So if you see a huge dollar move and you haven't watched the news and you don't know why it's happening, you would think, oh, maybe just traders thought it was bearish because they want to sell. No, no, she opened her mouth about something and it caused the market to react because of what she said. So you should, if you don't participate in, and don't feel bad about seeing the market go 10 times higher and you didn't get in on the action, it doesn't matter. These things happen, and you will. It's a learning curve for you. So even if you don't participate, like I said, just watch it and understand the ebbs and flows of the financial markets.
it's really interesting. Like, what's the word you mention all the time? The cause and effect. I really like that one. And things like that. It's just like patterns in technical trading. It just takes so many times that you actually have to view it before it sticks in your head. But once you can start to interpret or be in advance of the actual announcement, that's when you can start to earn some profit from it.
Yep, indeed. So anyway, where shall we move on from here, P-Man?
You know, this. I think this episode is just, it's freestyle.
It's freestyle.
What do you want to chat about, Phil?
I think we should talk about the lifestyle. You know, like you see so many videos and Instagram posts and things like that of people posting different lifestyles, and I don't think all of them are 100% accurate. First of all, and I think that maybe we should discuss a bit about the lifestyle, or our lifestyle, with what can our lifestyle be like, we'll say, for a financial trader, a self-employed financial trader.
Well, it's been so long since I've been over to Ireland and visit you, so I have no idea. Do you still have an office, or how are things going over there?
I'm sitting in an office right now with three screens, a gaming keyboard and a gaming mouse and a beautiful headset. Gaming keyboard and gaming mouse, and I don't game.
All right. Well, it's nice clicking the button.
Yeah, yeah.
I've actually thrown away my screens, Phil. I've decreased my screen real estate. And I remember when I was first starting off trading, that was so important to me, just to have all that screen real estate. And now I just have, I've gone from three to basically one.
Oh my God. I don't think I could ever go back. Like after buying the three screens, when I first got them, I I was just amazed by them. And now, like, I use them for everything. If I'm going to be doing an Excel spreadsheet, or if I'm going to have several charts open at one time, I just move them from screen to screen. I just couldn't do it with one. I think I'll always have several screens. It's just been bed into me. You certainly don't need three screens or even two screens. You can trade from a laptop, you know.
Yeah, that's why they call it the laptop lifestyle.
The laptop life. You certainly live the laptop lifestyle, huh?
Well, sometimes.
Until your laptop broke.
I mean, it's just, I remember I was lying in my hammock in Voss. I've told you about Voss. That's where we go skydiving. And I was just lying in my hammock, and it was like a cool, like, spring day or whatever it was. I can't remember. But I was just lying there and taking a trade on the dollar yen, and I think I was in the trade for like 5 minutes or something before I hit my target. And I was like, Jesus, is this real? Sometimes it's just amazing.
Yeah, I guess the last time I really experienced the laptop lifestyle was when we were in Bali together.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I have a MacBook Pro there sitting on the ground next to me here, but like, it never gets turned on. You know, it's just sitting there, and I keep the trading to, or even anything to do with the markets, to the office, and I don't, like, that's just how I do it. But when we were away in Bali, you know, I noticed you had your laptop with you the whole time as well, so I kind of got a look at the markets from the laptop lifestyle there, and it was interesting.
It's probably not that hard for you, as you don't have to have your finger on the pulse all the time, because your trades have a longer time span. But like, for us that are considered day traders, we have to have the finger on the trigger and the finger on the pulse, you know.
You know what's mad? I was only just thinking this. Speaking of, like, because you have a different style to me, I have this feeling inside that even though I know deep down the market is going to tank, it always does. It will eventually have a what really market? Really
You're talking about the equities
stock market, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Maybe, like, I don't like the thought of being short the market. Is that weird?
No, like, I think you're it's easier to buy. I'm not sure if that's just something
easier to be a buyer of the market than a seller. Yeah. And I don't like to be a seller of the market right now, even though I think it's gonna happen. And so I think it's going to happen pretty soon. Sorry.
What happens if you flip the chart? So you flip the
true,
equities.
Yeah. If you turn it the other way around, yeah.
That's just perception, you know. Mm-hmm. I do that sometimes when I do a breakout strategy that I have. I always flip the chart to see how it looks from both ends. You know, like it's the same chart, but it's just a different perception of the trade.
Yeah. Well, like last night, I was thinking to myself, you know, because in 2008, I'm pretty sure you and I both missed the setups simply because, I know I wasn't involved in the markets back then. I was involved in the markets back then. I did have investments, but I wasn't a trader back then. But this time around, like, I know all the signals to what to be looking out for. You know, as soon as that market starts collapsing, like, that market can fall so hard. And I know exactly what I'm going to be looking out for before I start getting long. Like, think about the last time the S&P 500, like, what was the low of the S&P 500? 666. And it was called Damien. That was from 2008 financial crisis.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, the day was called Damien because for some reason, buyers came back to the market at 666. But is that really why they came back to the market? Like, I know a lot of people would like to think that, but there was an uptick in the ISM report, you know, when the ISM came out. So when the ISM is below 50, it's you know, the economy is seen as declining, let's say. If it's above 50, it's seen as growing but at a slower rate. So we're in trouble when it's below 50. But the ISM went all the way down to 35, I think, in the United States. That's for anyone who hasn't listened to previous videos. The ISM manufacturing report makes up 20% of gross domestic product in the United States. So it's a very important indicator. When that starts declining, it has a major effect on the stock market. And it's one of the key leading indicators in the United States. With a 3 to 6 month head start on any financial crisis. So it basically, when that starts declining, 3 to 6 months later, you're going to start seeing the stock market falling off a cliff. But in the case of the ISM versus the 2008 financial crisis, so the ISM was like at like 38, 37. You know, it went from like 40 to 37 really, really quickly, but then it started slowing down. And you know what was important there, people were still seeing a declining ISM number, but what they weren't seeing was the rate of change. So basically it was decreasing at a slower rate, if you get me. So it wasn't failing rapidly and picking up pace, it was slowing down. And then the next ISM number was the first positive number, if you get me. And that's when buyers came back to the stock market. So I know all the signals, you know, and I know exactly what I'll be looking at for the next crash.
Well, little things like that just stacks up when once you've seen them so many times as you have, Phil. And like, just for our listeners, just hang on, because when it happens, I'm sure Phil will give you little hints and drops everywhere.
Oh yeah, I know you will too. I know you'll be watching that, because although P-Man is a 100% technical trader, I can guarantee you, when you see that ISM take a little step up, just like it did in 2008, you'll even be a bit, I'm going to start sizing this thing up for a long.
Well, I think for the stock market, for me, it's all about dollar cost averaging. And I think that's just so much easier to be able to get into the market, you know? Mm-hmm. That's my strategy right there. Just take that lump sum of money that I've saved up for the equities market, and just start dollar cost averaging when it's time.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So anyway, so what else shall we discuss when we talk about the lifestyle? Anything you want to add to the subject?
Well, I think it's just funny when people start off trading and they have a certain set of inputs from the masses out there, and I think it's so many different styles different styles that you could go, you know, like I don't know, some tend to find it a bit boring and lonely. I know, like, we had a couple of chats about that before, and that's probably why it was so beneficial for us to start chatting on Skype, because it was just it can get lonely, you know.
Oh, it's not like what everybody seems to think. I guess what you and I probably had the same opinions when we first started out getting into the markets, but like, you know,
it's like this also have the like your mindset will start to change, you know, because you're doing something that like 99% of the world isn't, and there's a different set of parameters that you have to take consideration of, you know, and that just makes there's a shift in your mindset, and then you'd like to have other people with the same kind of mindset, you know. I think probably that's why it could tend to be viewed as lonely. I don't know.
Like, if anyone asks me, like, generally when people ask me that they want to get involved in financial trading, like, I got to be honest with you, most of the time my answer is why. I don't mean that in a bad way or a negative way, but I go, why? You know, just simply because what you and I have, you know, when we first started, it's an enormous amount of work. You know, there's no easy way in learning how to trade the markets. Like, you're not going to learn to trade the markets. And, you know, like, if you see some Facebook advert and this guy is killing it in the markets, it's not as positive, like, a lifestyle as you would think. You know, for me, I know my interests are growing capital, and that's it. I don't want to make money for like all of these nice things I want to buy. And I'm interested in like growing money and growing and compounding it and getting it bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then if I want to invest in something else, to continuously think about the future. But like, the a lot of these Instagram people are, or you know, traders, so-called traders, I don't know if they are or they aren't, but like they push out that lifestyle narrative an awful lot, you know, because it works. It sucks people in, you know, and hey, look at my Rolex, all this sort of stuff, and you can get this too if you do my signals, you know. Okay, but I think you and I that kind of left us very quickly, you know, when
like starting off, like of course those were the incentives that I had. I wanted like a lot of cool things and stuff, but like just progressing through the journey, I've been it's amazing how it shifted for me. Like I value time and freedom now. Yeah. And all the material things, I don't know, it's just it's been put on a bit of the back burner for me. So
yeah, I'm the same. Like, and the freedom lifestyle is so, like, when you can, like think about, like, my last year for me alone and the holidays that I've been on, you know, that lifestyle, I've just been able to just get up and go and see the world and see spectacular things. There's nothing like it. You know, I remember go on.
Isn't that what's life is about, you know? Like,
yeah.
At the time of your death, you're just surrounded by memories, you know. There's no, you're not thinking about things and stuff like that. I think it's very important that you've taken the step and really focusing on and traveling and then having experiences.
Exactly, like experiences in life. You're not going to be at your deathbed, you know, with your Ferraris parked outside and your watches all surrounding you that are all going to go to someone else because you're gone now. You know what I mean? All these material items aren't going to last forever. Or not, they will. But I mean, you're not going to last forever.
Well, so, you know, you could be buried as a Viking chief. They had a lot of stuff put into their burial grounds.
Yeah, and then they were all dug up and robbed.
So you could probably get your Ferrari and bury it, would you?
Yeah, imagine. Anyway, what a totally random conversation we're having today. Yeah, we're just talking about the life, you know. This is the life of a trader is just so not what you would really believe. You know, it's not what you think. It's more the mindset changes. You know, you go from wanting these material things to I want to grow my capital as big as I possibly can.
But it's important to say that we're probably not the norm, you know. So there are other people out there who probably focuses on the materialistic things, and there's no right or wrong, you know. We're just talking about like different experiences of the journey.
Like, did you know? Did I have the M3 when I was? Did I have the M3 when I first met you? I can't remember.
The convertible one?
Yeah,
I've seen pictures of. That's about it.
Well, with me, you know, I had a BMW M3 for a while, and like when I start getting more into the markets, I start looking at that M3 as that could be money in my trading account. You know, that's sort of why.
Well, yeah. So that like, tends to happen. So you like you look at things and you're okay. Is this depreciating or like could I grow this from something?
Yeah,
it's just
mad. It's like another friend of mine rang me the other day and like. If I go into detail, this guy's watches alone, like ridiculous. But he bought last year. He spent 70 grand on a Jeep, and he's doing an MBA at the moment. And now the penny's dropped. If you know what I mean, he's just said his Jeep has devalued in 1 year by 25 grand, and he's furious because he's like, "What a silly investment I made." You know, not even an investment, but like what a silly thing to do. So I said to him here, my days of buying brand new cars are over. I'm not doing that. I hate depreciation. I just want to make money and grow capital, you know, and now he's got the same mindset. So his goal is I'm not selling it. He's not going to realize the risk, if you know what I mean. He's just going to keep the thing forever.
Yeah, well, it just turns into a game, you know, and you want to do as best as you can.
Yeah, but
it's
exactly.
It's also important to mention that like the relationship with money as a trader, it starts to there's a bit of a shift there. So you probably experienced that as well.
Yeah, there's some traders out there with like you know, well, I say seven figures isn't the unusual nowadays, but like there are guys out there that was like, I saw this video of a guy. Did you see this? Actually, the tradesman in Australia who was arrested, and they pulled him over, and they have three series BMW. And they, I can't remember if he had a large amount of cash, but he definitely had narcotics in the car with him. And he was taken to court anyway, and he had to produce where he got, you know, where he got the funds from. And I think he was able to produce the funds. But then what was really strange is when he produced his bank statements, he had $500 million in his bank account, you know? And it was like, what the hell? This guy, he was a tradesman. Like, he was a carpenter, and he had a team of carpenters working for him. They asked him, where the... Because they knew damn well, you don't make that money as a tradesman. And he said, no, I made it in the stock market. You know, and he said, it's been nothing but pain having this money, which is weird. Yeah. Anyway, we're really rambling on now. So I think it's time we start wrapping things up. But again, it's hard to get input from people listening to this podcast. I'll say it again. Give us some feedback. Tell us what you want us to discuss, because we really want to please you guys. You know, if we're going too fast or if we're talking about stuff that's not relevant, I'm sure there are a lot, because I notice all the people who are joining the groups, so I see there's a lot of interest around cryptocurrency. So if that's something you'd like P-Man and I to discuss maybe in the next podcast, just let us know. But we are going to get a very special person onto this podcast, and he's not getting away with it, and it's and it's Jonathan, and I know he's listening. So Jonathan from Brazintra, who is the sponsor of the podcast, he's a very, very interesting character with a very interesting story and an even more interesting company. So I would like people to, I can't say tune in next week, because maybe he, well, tune in next week anyway, but maybe he'll be on the podcast. Let's wait and see. But again, give us your feedback. Ask us questions. Let us know what you want us to discuss. It's very important to us. Isn't that right, P-Man?
Cool.
Okay. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. Have a lovely week. And P-Man and I will catch you again next week.
See you later.
Later. Bye-bye.